Everyone, and welcome to Minute 117 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is multiple award-winning documentary director Dana Nachman. Welcome back to the show, Dana.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, always fun having you on these shows, and, I like your opinion on stuff, hearing your opinion on stuff.
Thank you. That's so kind.
Well, you're the closest I know to someone who's in the industry, I guess you can say. So
nice. I gotta help you find more. I know I say I'm going to, and then I don't.
But every season you tell me that, and you never send me anybody, and that's it. The closest was Kurt, who he's the one who connected me to you.
So, oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, he sort of connected me to you. It was through him that I got to you, but I think I contacted you on my own after seeing that you guys did, Back Kid Begins together. I think that was the one.
Yep. We're working on a short together now too.
Ooh. So
that's, yes. Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
I haven't been in touch with Kurt in years. the last season he was on of mine was the first season of Die Hard.
I'll tell him you say hello.
Yes, please do. Please do. If he remembers who I am, I don't know.
I'm sure he will.
Maybe. All right, so minute 117 begins with Henderson and Mellish preparing their position, and ends with Toynbee setting fuses for the explosives. So we ended things yesterday. You know, we started this A-team montage where, you know, we were getting the men, you know, getting prepared for this upcoming battle, which could come at any moment. And you know, we saw Mike starting to put together some of the sticky bombs that we talked a lot about yesterday. And today continues with we get Mellish and Henderson in a particular room, trying to figure out what they're going to do. And Mellish says to, "All right, select the field of fire, crossfire with the one in the bell tower. All right, I can cover 12 to 9 from here." So it's interesting, this gives us, it tells us so much in just these few seconds of these two guys. They're setting up the room that they're in and how they're going to be, defending it and using that as a position, in order to fend off the enemy and stuff like that. And, the whole idea of talking about field of fire and, when he says 12 to 9, you have any idea what he's talking about with that? That he can cover 12 to 9.
12 to 9 feet? Or the clock, maybe?
It's a clock.
Yeah.
That's right. It's something that is used quite often in movies and also in military jargon, I guess you can say, where the whole idea is that you look at everything around you as a clock.
Okay, that's cool.
So that in order to tell somebody, where something is, so it's, instead of having to deal with the north, south, east, and west, you just, whatever direction you're facing, that's the clock. So it's,
right.
That's at 3 o'clock and at 5 o'clock and stuff like that. So 3 o'clock would be, on your left-hand side and, things like that. Have you ever seen the movie See No Evil, Hear No Evil with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder?
No, I have not.
No, okay. So it's a hilarious movie that if you have time you should check out. It came out in 1989, but it's about a deaf guy and a blind guy who witness a murder. And they have to work together in order to figure out who it is that committed the murder, and they also have this coin that they're walking around with. Whatever, I'm not going to go into it completely, but part of the idea is that in order to fight people. So, Gene Wilder, who plays the deaf guy, was able to tell Richard Pryor, who's the blind guy, if he wants the punch, which direction. So he tells him, oh, that's at, you know, that's at 5 o'clock and that's at 9 o'clock and stuff like that. So he knows where to punch.
Stuff like Got that. It. Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a great way to deal with that type of stuff. I mean, here they, you know, that this is what Henderson basically is saying. If from this room, I can cover these, you know, the area from basically the left side, the left side on the north or whatever it is. You have any idea what the word clock actually means? Like where it comes from?
No, I don't.
So it is, it's from the Latin word cloca, C-L-O-C-C-A,
uh-huh.
Which means bell.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you know when they started making mechanical clocks? Approximately. And I know earlier in the season we talked a little bit about clocks, but...
1600s?
The 13th century.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where they started, making striking clocks. And, the idea was to have bells that would ring, you know, on the canonical hours in order to tell people, when they had to come for prayer and stuff like that.
Right. Okay.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah. I actually also just learned that they have military clocks, which are 24-hour clocks. Like, well, we're talking about analog clocks, not digital. Digital, obviously, you have a digital watch, so that, if it tells you that the time is 1800, so you know that it's 6 p.m., stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But there are apparently clocks which show both. So that, it'll have like 1 and 13 next to each other, and then 2 and 14, and, so on and so forth, so that when the hands move around, depending on whether it's daytime or nighttime, you know that you see immediately what time it is. That type of
thing. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I find that interesting too. And these two guys, again, it's just a few seconds, but it tells us so much also, because it's letting us know in the future what these guys are going to be doing, what area they have to cover. This goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, that they're showing us something briefly that and they're using dialogue to tell us what it is. And then later on, we're going to see it, so that it's a little more familiar when we see it next. That type of thing.
Right.
And then the shot changes, and we see someone hauling up a 30 caliber machine gun up into the clock tower, and we see that it's Jackson, and we see that Parker is already there with him. Again, this is you called it yesterday perfectly. This is a montage, basically, just the way unlike TV show montages, which literally shows like a second from each thing, because of usually time constraints. So here they're able to give us a few more seconds and let us see the various things that are going on. But it's just great watching the whole thing. And like, even as we see the machine gun being pulled up into the tower, so they give us a shot, from afar, where we see once again some of the ruins of this area. But we also get to see some of the other men in other positions, preparing for this upcoming battle and stuff like that. So it's great. And at the same time, they also show us the height of this bell tower, which it looks pretty high. Makes you wonder how they actually got up there. I guess they have climbing skills or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this little section here is really interesting to me as well. And it, like, so from 7 seconds, the gun, to 3 seconds, like, that's a pretty long, so that's what, 15 seconds. that's an expensive 15 seconds if you think about it. Like, you know, you think about this from a production standpoint. So the first shot is an extremely cool shot. It kind of is similar to the shot that you liked in the yesterday's minute, which was, you know, from overhead down to the boat, right? I guess. Yeah. And now it's the opposite, right? It's from down to up. Like, these perspective shots are really cool. So you have this one, like, pulling up, and then you have from the wide shot, right, of, like you just mentioned, of it going up, and then the third shot is a close-up or of once it gets to the top, pulling it in. So it's three shots over 15 seconds that really are extremely visual. That's, you know, that 15 seconds shows you it's not a small budget movie, you know, to get all three of these perspectives of that one situation.
That's the way you look at it, you know, that if they do it quickly like that, then therefore it means that it's a you know, it means they have a larger budget.
Yeah, I mean, you could have done all that with one shot, right? But he didn't have, he had the luxury of not having to do that, and it really is amazing looking.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And again, visually, it explains so much about what's going on. You know, that's great. And then, you know, we see Jackson, you know, hauling it in, bringing the machine gun closer to him as he's, you know, as they're getting prepared there. And then we're back to the guys dealing with the Sox. You know, got Ben and Ryben and Upham. The three of them are in charge of creating these sticky bombs. And I love that. I don't know if you noticed this, the music changes during this little scene right now, making things feel more intense, you know, about what's going on. You know, it's not it's not like overpowering music, but if you look at it, you know, so, you know, and here we have the guys just you know, Mike basically handed off to Ryben the sock, and Ryben secures the sock a little more, and then, you know, he dips his hand into the axle grease and then starts greasing the sock. And then once they're, you know, then they give it to Upham, who closes it. And then, you know, they end up giving it back to Toynbee, who's going to get ready to start adding in the fuses and stuff like that. And again, it's amazing visually the way that they're doing this. And one of the things that they don't really explain to us is you know, how long do they actually have until they believe the enemy is going to show up? Because, you know, if you're coating stuff with axle grease, I don't think it's gonna stay sticky for days. You know, it seems like it's something that needs to be a little more imminent.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know enough about axle grease to tell you how long it will remain wet and sticky for you to put it on. You know, to put it on the tracks of a tank. That I couldn't tell you.
Right. Something that's interesting about this, which I just imagine was something in the edit room, was, you know, so we had on yesterday's episode, they started with the sticky bombs, right? And then they went to that scene that we were just talking about of the hoisting the munitions up, and then back to the sticky bomb making. So that was kind of you know, they could have put that all together, the sticky bomb making, right? But they didn't. They separated it out. And that was something that they could decide in the edit room. And they very well could have, right? That they had it all together. And then they're like, oh, no, let's see what happens if we do the first part here and the second part here. Like, that's some kind of navigating and changing that they could do in the edit room, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very interesting the way that they – well, again, maybe it's to drag things out a little bit more and make it feel as if there's more stuff that's going on.
Totally. Yep.
Than there really is, even though it is the same continued action of what they're doing.
Right. Stuff like that. Right. Right.
Yeah. And then we get to see something very interesting. We see Ryben then putting his boot back on with Barry. You know, showing us not Ryben, one of the other guys. One of the airborne guys putting his boot back on. And I like the way that they do it from the perspective that, you know, it's showing us that they're doing this stuff on the fly. meaning they just said, okay, this guy, come over here, and then you take off your socks, and we're going to use those right now. You know, those are the, you know, it's not as if they went around and collected, 50 pieces of 50 pairs of socks, and they started working on them. It's okay, every man, when they're less busy, come over and give us your socks.
Right.
Give us your poor. Give us your socks.
Exactly.
What's the phrase on Ellis Island? Give us your weary. Give us your GI socks.
Right.
So yeah, I like the way that they show that. Do you know any problems with wearing shoes without socks? And we're not talking about sandals and stuff like that. We're talking about like boots and stuff like that. I found a list of six reasons why you should wear socks when you have
I could think of three off the top of my head.
Okay.
Blisters.
Okay. That is
getting sweaty and getting smelly.
Okay. Yeah, those are all on here for sure.
Let's see. What else? Slip, like your feet slip or something, maybe?
Inside of your shoe? Maybe not. Again, this isn't a list I made up. So the number one on the list is blisters. Then you have chafing, which also is unpleasant. It could affect your posture.
Mm.
You know, if you do it too much and stuff like that, it can give you a reduced range of motion, and damage your muscular holding patterns and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
The idea is that socks, it's not the only thing that's going to, to help, but, the idea is if you walk around in shoes without the socks quite often, it might lead to poor posture. It's something that can also, it can ruin your shoes because of sweating.
Sweat
inside of the shoes, it's going to eventually cause your shoes to shrink.
Oh, that's
because
weird.
Of the fact that, here you have usually leather or whatever. So, when it gets, it's going to get wet from your foot. Obviously, this will make someone more susceptible to different types of foot infections and foot diseases and stuff like that. So that could be a problem. The next one is what's known as moisture wicking.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
Because basically, when you wear socks, it keeps your feet dry.
Right.
When you're in hot weather, and whether hiking or taking a long walk and stuff like that. So socks can also then give you a little bit of extra warmth and protection during cold weather at the same time also. And, still makes it worthwhile. Then number six on this list is the prevention of cold feet. Sometimes in the winter, my wife always says to me, put on socks before you go to sleep, and stuff like that. And you sometimes can feel the difference, if you sleep with socks in the winter and stuff like that.
I cannot do that.
I don't like doing it. I don't do it that often. Only when it's really cold. And the final thing on this list is the one that you mentioned, the bad smell, odors. The idea is that there's more of a chance that you're going to get like a fungal infection and things like that by walking around without socks in your shoes and stuff like that. In general, it depends obviously on what type of shoes you're wearing, stuff like that. People walk around in sandals. Obviously, if it's something that I guess is more airy, so it's less of an issue, I guess, from that perspective. But it goes to show also that in this movie, here we are in the middle of a battle. We don't really care. We need our socks for for this type of thing. So that's what we're going to do.
True. Yes.
Don't have a choice.
Nope.
Surrender your socks, as Ryben said.
Yep.
And then, you know, as the minute continues, so Miller and Ryan actually show up where they're making all these bombs, looking at everything. And then we see, you know, someone walking with a helmet filled with mines or explosives. And they walk and they bring it over to the Toynbee and they give it to him. And we see that they start placing these explosives inside of the rubble. Right. You know, which, again, great visualization, because it's going to tell us stuff that's going to happen later.
Right.
Later on in the movie, when there are explosions from the rubble, we now will know why. Because we yep. see that they're placing these bombs.
They're planting all the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday you were talking about planting seeds of information. Here they're planting seeds of minds.
Right.
And again, it's amazing visually. I really like the way that they do this.
Yeah, me too.
And they also show us the way that they have the typical cord, you know, that is connected to, you know, even if you just watch cartoons with Wile E. Coyote and stuff like that, there's always the cord, you know, that goes from the dynamite to the to the lever that you push.
You know, totally.
Here we have, they're laying the wire here also for that whole thing. It gives us an idea of how much planning is going into this whole thing. I like this. I really
it's
like
a big it. Undertaking.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like the way they do it.
Yeah, me too.
All right. And that's how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I don't think so. I really like it. It's good.
Okay. All right. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances.
Tom Hanks. Okay. So,
you know, why don't you once again start from your number five and work your way up?
Okay. So number five is The Post. Number four is Forrest Gump. Number three is Big. Number two is Philadelphia. And number one is You've Got Mail.
Why am I not surprised that you have a rom-com as your top move? I was surprised. I was expecting you to have, you know, You've Got Mail, Sleepless in Seattle, any other, Tom Hanks rom-coms that you can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be your list. But okay. Great job with that list. Is there any particular reasons that, I mean, like, what's your reasoning behind some of these?
You know, it's funny. When I was reading it, I realized I wasn't really doing it for performance. I was doing it for just the movies I liked the best. If I had to change, you know, was it supposed to be performance?
It's what it could be. I mean, again, I'm very flexible with these type of things.
Yeah, I mean, if that was the case, I might bump up Philadelphia to number one potentially, and maybe Forrest Gump higher as well. But I just did it in terms of like what are the movies that I go back to time and time and time again. I mean, I've watched probably You've Got Mail 5 times this year. Like, I mean, it's actually referenced in the rom-com I wrote. It's a pretty big movie for me. So, I mean, I don't think it was the hardest role for him, you know, of all time. It's seems like these roles are a little bit like him as a person potentially. So Philadelphia, I think, was a pretty magnificent, you know, acting turn. Did he win the Academy Award for that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he should have.
Yeah, that was his first of two.
Yep. The other one, what was the other one?
Forrest Gump.
Oh, right. Oh, that was that. Yeah, so good. So good. Yeah, those, I mean, I would say were the biggest acting things for him, but I did it of what movies I liked.
Okay, makes sense. That's great. All right, so Dana, would you like to tell people once again where they can find you?
Sure. My website's dananockman.com, and I'm on all the different social channels. You know, you can find me under my name.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude.